All right. Well, I wanted to start a new series on prayer. And we're going to call this Keeping a Balance in Our Prayer, following a book on prayer that I thought carried some of these things well. Lesson one has two parts. Lesson one is desiring prayer, getting us to want to desire prayer. And part A, which we'll deal with tonight, is seeing prayer's necessity. John 4, 23 and 24, Jesus is sitting at the well in Samaria talking to the woman at the well, and he says this, "But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him." There's an interesting picture to me that he is seeking people to worship him, and not just people, but people who are ready to worship in spirit and truth. He goes on to explain, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. It's not a bunch of physical ritual to please some physical God. This is a spiritual God, and he wants the worship to be done in spirit and truth. So the Father seeks such to worship him. When you think about it, the two concepts put it all in balance. Spirit, the depth of our being, the very essence of who we are, and truth, the facts, as God knows them and has related them to us. When we worship God, it is not just all spirit as you feel led, nor is it just all truth as though it's just this point, next point, and third point, we're done. It is something that takes us to the depth of our spirit, but is then according to God's truth. As it turns out in history, man tends to swing back and forth between a Christianity focused on mystical experience or one focused on facts alone. Depending on your background, you may lean toward one or the other in your prayer time. I think I have formulated through the years sort of an anti-mystical thing, because it has been so often presented to me as the only way to actually worship God. And I recognize that so much of this mystical experience stuff can be manufactured in our own mind and hearts, not necessarily something actually with God. So I tended to say we just deal with the facts, just the facts, ma'am, you know, and we deal with only that. But coming back around, I see that that has actually limited my ability to truly worship. So let's not be swinging our pendulum back and forth, mystical feelings of experience and then just the hard facts, and that's all. In fact, let us desire the prayer that offers, that God offers, whether it matches our tendency or not. The thing is this, we're not interested in just doing what feels right for us. We're trying to have everything that God gives us. So, listen to the psalmist. They sang their prayers to God. And I just picked out six of the passages that came to my mind. Often they embraced God in spirit. And I want you to feel with them this experience. Psalm 18:2, "The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength," again, my rock, "in whom I will trust, my buckler, which is a shield, and the horn of my salvation and my high tower. Now, the thing here is, he's not saying, he fed me, he kept the enemies from killing me. He's just talking about what God was to him, you see. That sense of safety that he had when he was with God. This was what God was to him as he was feeling, as he's experiencing it. Psalm 30, verse 12, to the end that my glory may sing praise to thee and not be silent, O Lord my God, I will give thanks unto thee forever. Here is just a heart breaking forth, singing praise to God. And that was the experience of glory, you see. Psalm 40, verse 3, he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. He says, as I love the Lord, and as I speak of him, and I have this new song in my heart, in my mouth, people are going to hear this, going to hear the song, hear my praise, and then they will be lured to trust in the Lord. Psalm 42:2. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Here's a heart attitude that says, I'm happy to leave this life and just go to be with him. This is the person in love with the Lord, longing for a closer touch, you see. Psalm 73:25, whom have I in heaven but thee, and there is none upon earth that I desire besides thee. The natural comparison here is, we know what it's like to desire people on earth. But he says, that's nothing compared to how I desire God while I'm here on earth. This is that experience of the heart. And the last one I chose was Psalm 139:17. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. This is that the miser picking up his gold coins and letting them dribble back down, you know, and just rejoicing in the abundance. But what he's counting here are the thoughts of God to him. And so thoroughly thrilled with this. But on the other hand, we find other times the psalmist cried to God to go to battle for their needs. This is dealing with the facts, dealing with the truth here, see? Psalm 12:1, help or save, Lord, for the godly man seeth us, for the faithful fail from among the children of men. I'm just about the only one left faithful. Help, save. Psalm 22:19, but be not thou far from me, O Lord, O my strength. Haste thee to help me. I need help. Psalm 35:1-2. Plead my cause, O Lord, with them that strive with me. You run interference for me, you see. Fight against them that fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler and stand up for mine help. This is a fellow that needs something and he needs protection. Psalm 38:22. Make haste to help me. Make haste for my help, O Lord, my salvation. Psalm 59:1. Deliver me from mine enemies, O my God. Defend me, literally set me on high, from them that rise up against me. You see, he's rising up like a tide around him, and he says, put me on a high dry rock there. Keep me safe from these people rising up. And Psalm 143:7, hear me speedily, O Lord. My spirit faileth. Hide not thy face from me, lest I be like, or for I am become like unto them that go down into the pit. It feels like my spirit is ready to die. I'm ready to go to the pit. So looking at the psalmists, but we can also look at the experiences of men. John Owen, I've mentioned him before. He was a deeply theological preacher and writer. It is considered that in the study of the Holy Spirit, his book, his work on the Holy Spirit was the final definition of the doctrine of the Holy Spirit. That's quite a feather in his cap. So this is, you know, old time guy, not light and fluffy. He's a deep theological guy. And he urged keeping a balance. Here's what he said: get an experience of the power of the gospel in and upon your own hearts, or all your profession, what you're professing, is an expiring thing. It just kind of runs out. If it's just your thoughts, you'll run out. But feel the experience of the power upon your own hearts. And his deep theology did not keep him from that sense of worshiping in spirit. The Apostle Peter was a down-to-earth practical fisherman. I remember when Jesus first did a miracle on his boat. They threw the nets over and he brought in an abundant thing, and he'd been fishing all night and hadn't caught a thing. And his response to this miracle was, "Depart from me, for I'm a sinful man." You know, it just, the supernatural stuff scared him. He wasn't in for the mystical stuff, you know. But listen to him as he lifted his spirit. 1 Peter 1, 7b and 8, I include 7b to tell you who he was talking about. Jesus Christ, whom, having not seen, he's talking to the people he's writing to, they hadn't seen Jesus. He had, but they hadn't. Whom, having not seen, ye love, in whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. That was the experience that he was expecting to find in the heart of those who had got saved after Christ had already ascended to heaven. So my message tonight is, think of your prayer time as your most important, most personal connection to your spiritual father. Jesus pictures it for us in John 15, 4 and 5. He says, "Abide in me and I in you. Live in me, I live in you, dwell in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine." The vine is what grows from the ground. The branch is what branches off the vine. See? "No more can ye, except you abide in me." You can't break the branch off and expect it to produce fruit. "I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me," or severed from me, plucked from me, "ye can do nothing." So you are the branch that actually has no life in itself except for the life that it draws from the vine. We see that in plants, don't we? We understand that. We don't expect the severed, plucked branch to keep on living. So that's the thing we want to look at. The plucked vine, the one that's not connected anymore, it can do or produce nothing. Now, we don't want to be that kind of Christian. We can be so full of worshiping in truth that we forgot how to connect with spirit. But here's the problem. If we neglect true prayer in spirit and in truth, we lose our connection and we drift into nothing but an echo of life and not the real and abundant life that Jesus promised. Talking to living people, he said, "I want you to have life and that more abundantly." Well, that's the real life, not just the picture of life. But if we neglect prayer, we are choosing to sever that relationship. When we neglect true connection, we court and tempt the loss of the best quality of life. It's almost like, oh, I don't care. Just let it come. But when we do that, we invite worldly pleasures to fill our need of happiness. When spiritual joy dwindles, we fill it with something. We take up things for worldly pleasure. So the message then is, think of the necessity of prayer. This is where you have a disease and you have a pill to take, and for your life's sake, you have to take that pill every night before you go to bed. Well, you don't debate that, do you? You don't say, oh, I just watched TV too long, I forgot to take that pill. Oh, well. When it becomes that important, we recognize that it's a necessity for our very life. I want you to start thinking about not just saying prayers, if you catch my meaning. Because you might not have a prayer memorized, but you can go through the process. You know how to do the praying thing. You know how to do that. But I want you to keep a balance in your prayer, desiring it by seeing its necessity, seeing the whole thing, spirit and truth, in your prayer. Practice getting close enough to God that there's a thrill. There is a rapture that you sense in that communication. All right. Comments or questions about that?